Good evening. I'm Travis Zacharias. My wife Rosie is in the back there with our son Moises Santiago. We call him Moy. We have our daughter Zipporah, who's almost three. She stayed in high level with my brother to play with her cousins tonight, so she's not here tonight, but maybe tomorrow night, we'll see. We've spent the last, 3 years in Paraguay, serving with the EMC under the Board of Missions, and doing church planting there. We'll give a report tomorrow night, but tonight I'll share a little bit what God has put on my heart, and maybe throw in some stuff about Paraguay in there as well. We'll see what pops out. We're all forced to make decisions every day. First thing in the morning, the alarm goes off. Do I get up or do I hit snooze and sleep another 5 minutes? Do I eat toast or cereal this morning? Do I cheer for the Oilers? Do I cheer for the Flames, right? It's a tough question, right? Do I wear the red shirt or the yellow shirt? I wore the red one today. We're all forced to make many decisions every day. And perhaps one of the most important decisions, or the most important decision we have to make every day, is how we will respond to God. It's a decision that we make probably every day, sometimes subconsciously, sometimes consciously. Someone cuts us off. How do we respond to that person? If we responded to God appropriately in the past, hopefully in a way that will honor God, right? Tonight we were asked to make a decision. Are we going to choose to be holy or not? That's a decision, a choice that we all have to make. And hopefully that's a decision that we have to make consciously at least once in our lifetime. Will we choose to follow God or will we not? And there are people, not just in Paraguay, not just in Burkina Faso, but here in Canada as well, in the Crete maybe not, in the high level, they tell me there are lots of people. That's part of what, as Christians, that's something that we have to do, is bring people to the place where they ask themselves that questions consciously and think about it. Will I choose, how I would choose to respond to God? What is my decision? And today I want to look at three people in the Bible who had to make the decision. How will we respond to God? How will they respond to God? And the story, we find it in 1 Kings chapter 16 and 17. 1 Kings 16, we'll start at verse 29, right at the end. So 1 Kings 16, 29 till 33. In the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, Ahab, son of Omri, became king of Israel, and he reigned in Samaria over Israel 22 years. Ahab, son of Omri, did more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any of those before him. He not only considered it trivial to commit the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, but he also married Jezebel, daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and began to serve Baal and worship him. He set up an altar for Baal in the temple of Baal that he built in Samaria. Ahab also made an Asherah pole and did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than did all the kings of Israel before him. This is a bit of an introduction to the story. And I think there's a lot of things in that we need to understand the story. But I think reading this, we probably have more questions than answers at this point. First of all, who's Ahab? Okay, who are the people? Who's Ahab? Who's Jeroboam? Who's Jezebel? Who's Baal? What did Ahab do that provoked the anger of the Lord more than any of those before him? What were the sins that Jeroboam committed, right? Israel, when they became a country, they didn't have a king, but when they finally got a king, the first king was Saul, second king was David, and third king was Solomon. And Solomon, although he was the wisest man that ever lived, he had many wives, and many of them were foreign wives. And this was in disobedience to God, because when he brought his foreign wives in, they not only brought their good food and their interesting clothing, they brought their gods. And so Solomon built temples to those gods to keep his wives happy, and this kind of introduced the worship of other gods into Israel. That's just what the reason why God didn't want them to marry foreigners was, because he didn't want them to bring their gods into Israel. He wanted to keep Israel as a nation that worshipped only him. As a consequence to this disobedience of Solomon, the kingdom of Israel was split into two. So instead of just one country, Israel, now you have the northern kingdom, which is called Israel, and the southern kingdom, which is called Judah. And the northern kingdom of Israel didn't stay with the descendants of Solomon. They went to Jeroboam, and that's why he shows up in this passage. Jeroboam was the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel. And what were the sins that he committed? Well, he had political aspirations. He didn't want his citizens to be loyal to Judah. He wanted them to be loyal to him, to Israel. And what was happening was every year, the Israelites from the northern kingdom would go to Judah in the south, to Jerusalem, to the temple to worship God. And he didn't want them traveling to Judah every year, to Jerusalem, because he said, if they do that, they won't be loyal to me. They'll be loyal to Judah. So he built two golden calves, put one in Dan, one in Bethel, and he told them, he said, it's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods of Israel who brought you up out of Egypt. And so from then on, the people didn't go down to Jerusalem every year. They just went to Dan or to Bethel, and they worshipped the golden calves. That was the sin that Jeroboam committed. And those were the sins that the kings that came after him followed. In the next 55 years in Israel, there were seven kings, and those seven kings all disobeyed God. They all worshipped many gods, and they also pretended to worship God at the same time. And Ahab basically did the same thing. He became king in 874 B.C., and he was king for 22 years. His capital was Samaria, and he had married Jezebel. Jezebel was the daughter of the king of Sidon, and Sidon was the country just to the north of Israel. Now, Ahab's dad and Jezebel's dad wanted to form an alliance, and to seal that alliance, the princess married the prince, and they would be happy, right? Now, Jezebel, she worshipped Baal. And she really, really believed that Baal had power, that Baal was God. And so when she came to Israel, Ahab wanted to keep her happy, built the temple to Baal, built the altar to Baal. And Baal was the god of fertility. He brought the rain. He brought children. He let the plants grow. He brought offspring to the livestock. And Jezebel really, truly believed that he had this power. And you had to keep him happy, or you wouldn't get rain, you wouldn't get children, you wouldn't have crops, your livestock wouldn't have offspring, they wouldn't reproduce. And so Jezebel wanted to worship her god, even living in Israel, because she truly believed that Baal was God. So Ahab built his temple, and over time he began to worship Baal as well. And so from then on, in Israel, Baal and God were kind of worshipped at the same level. Perhaps Baal even more was... He kind of took God's place in Israel. And that's why it says that Ahab did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than did all the kings of Israel before him. And now this is where the interesting part of the story starts. We'll go to chapter 17, verse 1. Now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word. And then the word of the Lord came to Elijah. Leave here, turn eastward, and hide in the Kereth ravine, east of the Jordan. You will drink from the brook, and I have ordered the ravens to feed you there. So he did what the Lord had told him. He went to the Kereth ravine, east of the Jordan, and stayed there. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. Sometime later, the brook dried up, because there had been no rain in the land. Elijah was a prophet of God. He was the messenger of God, and he receives a message from God to take to the king, to Ahab. And this was a message that would not be received very kindly. But Ahab trusted God. He believed in him. He wanted to serve him. And so he went anyways, and he gave him the message. And the message that he gave him, I'm going to read between the lines, paraphrase a bit. Basically what he said is, the God of Israel is alive and well. I am his servant. He does not like it that you're disobeying him. The Lord God says he is a jealous God, and he does not want you to worship any other gods. So there will be no dew or rain until I say so. This will show that I am God, not Baal, that I am the creator of the heavens and the earth and all that is in them, that I am the God who brings rain, not Baal. I am the God that makes the plants grow, not Baal. I am the God who gives offspring to your livestock, who gives you children, not Baal. I am God, and there is no other. That was the message that Elijah brought. God wanted Ahab to stop worshiping Baal and to worship only him. And the rain stopped, just like God said it would. Now, I want you to imagine, picture it a little bit. What is Ahab's situation now? He's king of Israel. He's got many people depending on him, and there's no rain. And he doesn't know how long it's not going to rain. It might be a month, 2 months, a year. He doesn't know. In East Paraguay, where we live, they get about 5 times the moisture that they get here. So that's a lot of rain. But in Western Paraguay, they get rain. They'll go 10 months without any rain. It's kind of semi-arid. It's almost a desert. And when that happens, everything dies. And the cattle don't have food. This last year, they had to sell up to a third, half of their cattle because they didn't have water for the cattle. And it was really, really tough on them. Now, okay, imagine in Israel. They go 10 months, they go a year and a half, no rain. They're going to import all their vegetables. They have no water. They won't be able to shower. They won't be able to wash their clothes. There's no grass. They won't have it. Their cattle will die. It's a tough thing. And that's the situation that Ahab is in. He starts asking questions, right? Hopefully the rain comes soon. What would he be? He'd probably be thinking, what can I do to make the rain come? Why is Baal not listening to me? Baal is the god of fertility. He's supposed to bring the rain. How come it's not raining? Maybe Jezebel can convince him. Jezebel's got more pull, right? She's worshipped him longer. Maybe she can convince him. Maybe I should ask God for forgiveness. No. Why did Elijah have to come? I'm going to kill him. That'll take care of it. There's a way of thinking. I'm not sure if this is what Ahab was thinking, but when someone curses you, if you kill the person who cursed you, the curse will end. And maybe that's what Ahab was thinking. I'm not sure. But whatever it was, Ahab was desperate. He decided not to submit to God. He decided to kill Elijah instead. But God was with Elijah, and he sent him off to the Kereth ravine. There he would have water to drink from the stream. The ravens would come twice a day, bring him bread, bring him meat. Being a man, he probably didn't care that there weren't any vegetables on the menu. He had his meat, right? That's all he needed. And then, what happened? The water ran dry, right? Even where Elijah was, where God's servant was, there was no more water because there wasn't raining in the land. And that's where I'm going to end the story. I think it's a good spot to end, a bit of a cliffhanger. If you want to know what happens, you have to read the next chapter, the rest of the chapter. I think some of us, well, we have to realize what God says always happens, right? God told Ahab that it would stop raining, and it did. Elijah knew that it would. He had confidence. And when God told him to go to the Kereth ravine, he went because he knew God would take care of him. And some of us are like Jezebel. I think some of us are like Ahab. Some of us are like Elijah. And you wonder, how are some people like Jezebel? She has a pretty bad reputation, and deservedly so, right? She, if you read some of the stories that happened, some of the things she did in the next few chapters, she deserves the bad reputation she has. No one names their little girl Jezebel. You don't see any Jezebels running around, right? Because she has a bad reputation. I think it's a nice name, but this is the first time we meet Jezebel. We don't know anything about her until this passage, so I think we have to give her a chance here. But she, where is she coming from? She grew up in a family that didn't know anything about God. They worshipped Baal. That's the only thing she'd been taught her whole life. And she's now seen the power that God has for the first time, probably. She's never had anybody explain to her. I don't know if she heard how God led Israel out of Egypt, that kind of thing. She probably never heard. Ahab probably didn't explain it to her either. But now she would see that God had power to make the rain stop and that Baal wasn't bringing the rain. And she had to make a decision. How would she respond to God? Will she decide to stop worshiping Baal, or will she follow God? And she's under a lot of pressure. Her family, her friends, her whole society has puts pressure on her to follow Baal. That's what they've always believed. That's what everybody else around her believes. That's a lot of pressure. And she has to make this decision. And many Paraguayans, I think, are faced with a similar situation. Will they reject what their family and their friends, and to a point their culture also, believes? And will they worship only God? A lot of Paraguayans, say about 90% are Catholic. Most of them are nominal Catholic, which means they say they're religious, but they're really not. Their grandparents went to church every Sunday. And the parents might have, but they probably don't anymore. But they're Catholic because they were born in a Catholic home. And their Catholicism is also a mixture of animism with Catholicism. They have a group of evil spirits that they have to keep happy, that they're a little bit scared of them. God maybe doesn't have power to protect them from those evil spirits. They have to keep them happy as well. But at the same time, they try to serve God and that often leads to to worshiping Mary and idols because God is too far away to actually reach. They have a misconception about who God is. And this is what their culture, the society's been telling them. And they're under a lot of pressure to keep believing that, not to give their full worship, their full trust to God. And in North America, I think there are more and more people who grew up in that secular system of belief. We all know people, at least in high school. I went to high school in Steinbeck. That's a pretty Christian town. There's over 25 evangelical churches. But I went to high school with people who had never heard the gospel. They grew up in a secular home. Their parents never told them about God. Their parents might not have known about God either. And they say, you know, there are lots of atheists, people who say God doesn't exist. There's agnostics. You go to the university, they're full of them. And we all know people like that. We can probably all think of a few people, our friends of ours, who say God doesn't exist. He's not real. Those people they're kind of like Jezebel, but they come to the point where they have to make that decision as well. Are they going to believe God and his word, or are they going to believe their society, their family, their friends? Are they going to believe that, or God and his word? And it's a decision that everyone has to make. Maybe some of you have to make that decision. I'm not sure where you are spiritually, if you've ever made that decision to follow God. And if you never have made the decision consciously to follow God, to trust in his promises, trust that he is who he says he is, that's my challenge for you tonight, to make that decision to follow him. Some of us are also like Ahab. Where we left him off, he's suffering the consequences of his sin. He's king of a country that has no water. It's a bad place to be. And he needs to decide if he's going to continue living in sin or if he's going to decide to trust in God. Instead of worshiping God halfway, will he worship him 100%? I think sometimes we think that when God said it's not going to rain, it was a punishment for the disobedience. But I think it was actually God being merciful to Ahab. What he's doing is giving him a chance to see how powerful he actually is. He's saying, Ahab, you believe that Baal has the power to bring rain? I'm going to show you that I actually am the one who has power. And then you're going to have to make the decision. Will you submit to me? Will you worship me or not? And it's God being merciful to Ahab, giving him a chance to repent, a chance to come back to him. And God is merciful to us too. He will forgive us. He wants to forgive us. And he is willing to do that. Some of us are very religious people. Ahab was a very religious man. He said he worshipped God. Those golden calves were supposed to be the gods that led him out of Egypt, but they definitely weren't. We know that. We understand that. We laugh at the... We think, you know, worshipping this calf, that's not God. We know that. It's obvious, but to them it wasn't. They thought that was God. So there are Christians today who read the Bible. They search for the will of God for their lives, and then they go home and read their horoscope and search for the will of God in the stars. And they forget that it's God who made the stars. They forget that the stars are just balls of gas that are going up there. They don't even know where they're going, never mind where we're going. They forget that. In Paraguay, there are Christians who pray to God when their children get sick. And then they're also tempted to go to the medicine man and ask him to heal their children. And he uses other powers. And it's a temptation for many Christians because that's how they grew up. The grandmothers put a lot of pressure on their grandchildren when their great-grandchildren are sick. He's going to die if you don't take him. You better take him. And it's a pressure to do what the world says and not believe God and his word. The problem with being just religious is that people like Jezebel can see right through people like Ahab. They know that they don't believe it. They know that, you know, he doesn't believe it. Why should I? And some of us, perhaps, we go to church on Sunday. We maybe even read a Bible every day. But if we don't let God change us on the inside, the people around us will see that. They'll see that, you know, you're no different than me. They say that all the time. I've heard that. And it's only when they see that there is a change, that we make the decision to let God change our lives, that they will see that God has power. They will see that God can change them, that there is hope, that Christ lives in us. And like Ahab, we're forced to make that decision. How will we respond to God? Will we decide to worship God 100%? Will we decide to make that choice to be holy, or will we decide to just be mediocre, just submit halfway to God, and then the other half, just do what we want? And some of us are also like Elijah. I think most of us are probably like Elijah. He's sitting beside a dried-up riverbed. He's got bread. He's got meat. I picture him with he's sitting in a lawn chair. He's got a tall glass. He's got a pitcher in his hand. In Paraguay, he'd be sitting there under a mango tree, maybe, and he'd have a wampa and a bombilla and his termo, his thermos, his yerba, right? His tereré. He'd have that there. But the what's similar in both pictures, he's got the pitcher, but the pitcher's empty. There's no water. And that's where Elijah is. He did what God told him. God hid him beside the river, gave him food, but now there's no water. Did God fail him? What happened, right? And we don't know. It doesn't say how long he sat beside the river with no water. But maybe Elijah started doubting. I'm not sure. But we've all probably been there. We've obeyed God. We've done what we thought he wanted us to do. And the riverbed dries up. We start asking God questions. You know, was this really what I was supposed to do? Did God really tell me to go sit beside the Kareth Ravine or not? Did God really, will he take care of me? If you read the rest of the story of Elijah, we know that God does take care of Elijah. It's interesting that the instructions he gives him, how is he going to take care of him? He gives him just a ridiculous plan that makes no sense. He's supposed to go a few days' journey on foot to Zarephath, which is in Sidon, the country where Jezebel came from, where they worship Baal. And there he's supposed to go live with a widow who has no food, and she's going to feed him. It's a plan that makes no sense, right? And Elijah, does he have faith or doesn't he? Is he going to follow through with God? Is he going to obey God? Or is he going to go off somewhere off on his own? And he decided to trust God, and he went. And God proved himself faithful. He proved that he did what he said. And sometimes I think when God tests us, we sometimes say it so that God can see whether or not we have faith. I think God knows whether we have faith or not. When he gives us something to do that we think is really hard, that only he can help us through, it's not to see whether we have faith. It's so that we can see that God will prove himself faithful, that he will do what he says. I think that's why he sometimes gives us these things that just look ridiculous, that we're supposed to do. It's so that we can see that God has the power to do the ridiculous. Things that only he can do and no one else can do. So that our faith in him grows. So that we learn to trust him more. So that we'll hand over every area of our life over to him. And that's the decision that we have to make sometimes. Will we obey God when the situation looks impossible? When it seems that God's not paying attention? How will we respond to God? Will we have complete faith in him? Will we trust only in him? Or will we decide to go off in our own direction? To not trust him anymore? The theme for this conference is mission is life, right? And our life is a mission. We are witnesses to the people around us. It's only when we let God change us inside, it's only when we are filled with a joy that only God can give us, that we can live our life, that our lives can be a mission, that we can go out, share the good news with others in a way that they will respond, that they will see God and respond to him in a way that we hope that they will, the way that we pray that they will. And that's why it's important that we hand every area of our life over to God. We need to make that decision. Our God is only true God, and he's proven himself faithful. He said it wouldn't rain, and it didn't. He told Elijah he'd protect him, and he did. And he's made many promises to us. We can be sure that each one of those promises he will fulfill. He will come back one day. We need to decide how we will respond to him. Like Jezebel, you might need to decide if you will trust in God and follow him. Like Ahab, you might need to decide, will you believe God? Will you follow him faithfully and only him? And like Elijah, you might need to decide, will you continue to trust God even when things look impossible? That's my challenge. Let's make the decision to follow God, to believe only in him, to have complete trust in him, and God will be faithful. And we will see him change ourselves and change others around us, as long as we're faithful to where he has called us. Thanks.